I had this idea that when you got to the coal face, it was like, I don't know, 8 feet coal.
Yeah.
And then, you know, some rock here there. But it was mostly, you know, just this wall of coal. I mean, when they say seam of coal.
Yeah. Yeah, some are very, you know, wide. Some are very, I mean, they're all over the place. They're often one sort of above the other, you know, sort of layers. So it'd be a seam, so you'd, you know, the tunnel would go down and you'd kind of branch off, work that seam, you know, and then, you know, sort of move further down. What partially killed, it's inevitable that coal mines die because it just gets further and further away and it's just harder to harvest it and it's more expensive. So it just comes to a certain point where it's just too deep. And that's sort of what happened. There's tons of coal in Cape Breton and tons of coal in Nova Scotia still. It's not, it's high sulfur coal, so it doesn't burn particularly well. So it's not, for example, in Nova Scotia right now, 98% of the electricity comes from coal. It comes from South American coal because the coal in the power plants that were built, coal-fired power plants, to use the coal from Nova Scotia, they have to put these expensive scrubbers on. It'd be too expensive because of the high sulfur. So they get the coal from South America and use that.
Nostalgia being what it is people harken back to a golden age when things were good.
Yeah.
There is no...
When was that?
There was no golden age for coal workers in Nova Scotia.
Right.
It was... It started off bad.
Yeah.
And usually just got worse.
Absolutely.
And
so yeah, until it died. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, sort of... industry's heyday, such as it was in Nova Scotia, would be back in sort of around World War II, because the industry was at its peak, there's lots of demand, all that sort of thing. But this is
and they wanted miners. I mean, they changed the law so that miners weren't like allowed to work anywhere else.
That's right.
Do anything else.
It was key. I mean, they did. This is the thing about this book. You know, when I set it to write it, is, you know, a bunch of motivations, right? But one of them is that this is this kind of great untold story and forgotten, you know, bit of Canadian history. You know, it's about the miners, but also, I mean, those guys down there, those people like my grandfather, my great-grandfather, I mean, it fueled the war effort in World War I and II.
Literally.
And it fueled a lot of the industrial expansion, I mean, in Ontario and Quebec, until coal was usurped by oil. So, I mean, it really built this country, or parts of this country at particular moments. And the people who did it, in the end, are just kind of discarded, I guess. And I know everybody knows that's the nature of, you know, the great forces of economics and all of that. But I think their role is ignored, and you know, there's a period where, you know, coal miners, it's almost a cliche, right? The Nova Scotia coal miner, you know, always on the dole, sort of lazy parasites, you know, kind of getting government handouts, this kind of thing. But you know, I think, you know, that's a kind of it's a revisionist history, because, you know, they did have their moment, but it was always hard. I mean, you know, the coal companies, when things got bad, you know, when they tried to strike for, you know, miners' rights, you know, they would cut off their heat, they would cut off their food, they would evict them from their homes in the middle of winter, entire families. There was no social safety net at that point. Things got really rough. The coal companies would bring in their goons, you know, the muscle, and they would ride miners down the streets during the strikes. At one memorable occasion in 1925, a bunch of company police came down and opened fire on some of the miners, shot three or four of them, killed a guy named Bill Davis, 5'2", father of nine, with the tenth on the way, and evermore, and then I think it's June 11th in Cape Breton, every year since 1925, all miners in Cape Breton lay down the tools. You know, it's known as Davis Day. Those wounds are still fresh there in Cape Breton and much in Nova Scotia.
The only thing that made me feel better about it is that even the owners of the mines didn't. It's not like they did really well out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they did well, but eventually, pretty much all of them lost their shirts.
That's right. That's right.
So at least it was like, wasn't all just them sucking it in. Like, eventually, they too were destroyed by coal.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I mean, it's true. The one of the ironies is that the profits rarely stayed in Nova Scotia, right? Because the ownership of the mines was always in like London or Boston or Toronto or Montreal or eventually, the federal government. They always, they left some wages there. It's almost like these kind of African situation, right? You know, where Canadian mining companies go into Africa, take out the whatever it is, the ore, leave some salaries. That's about it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there wasn't any great profit. I mean, I don't think anybody made. Everybody seemed a lot. Everybody was cursed, right? By the Black Rock.
The book is Coal Black Heart, The Story of Coal and the Lives It Ruled. I'm speaking with the author, John DeMont, and Coal Black Heart, published by Doubleday Canada.